Carlos Silva was sitting in a back corner table at the Lion in the Crown Saloon. The first day he came into the saloon, Lucy started toward him, but stopped when she saw his face. For a moment, she felt as if the devil himself had come for her because of the life she was living, and terrified, she turned and moved as far away from him as she could. And though she no longer believed he was the devil, she still avoided him. Lucy was not the only one who avoided any contact with Silva. Neither Rose nor any of the other girls would have anything to do with him. But it wasn't just the women who avoided him. The men who were regular customers also tended to give him a wide berth. There was about him a scent of sulfur, the bartender Harry Moose suggested when he talked about the strange and silent red-faced man who would come every night now for a week. He ordered the same thing every night, 2 mugs of beer, a plate of pickled pig's feet, and a boiled egg. Almost immediately, there was speculation about who he was and what he was doing here. He didn't wear a gun, so nobody thought he was particularly dangerous, though his looks were enough to frighten all but the most confident person. Silva had come to the Lion and the Crown every day waiting for his subject to show up. He had no intention of confronting Matt Jensen, so there would not be a shootout in the way of Kyle Houston. Carlos Silva had killed 17 men, though not one of the killings had been the result of a face-to-face confrontation. That wasn't the way Silva worked. He operated from afar, killing every one of his victims from a distance of from 500 to 1,000 yards. But despite his long-distance killing, before he shot anyone he wanted to, no. He had a compulsion to see them up close. He wanted to see them breathing, eating, drinking, laughing, and talking with others. He wanted to experience some of their life before he took it from them. He intended to kill Matt Jensen, just as he had promised. But he wanted to get a close look at him first. And Reed had told him that from time to time, Jensen frequented this particular saloon. Silva had heard stories about Matt Jensen. He had even seen dime novels that were written about him. Matt Jensen was a famous man, certainly far more noted than anyone Silva had ever killed before. Because of the way Silva worked, most people had never even heard of him. But after this job, after killing Matt Jensen, Silva had an idea that he would be well known. He would become famous for killing a famous man. On his fifth consecutive day of coming to the Lion and the Crown Saloon, 4 men came into the saloon.
Harry, 4 beers.
Yes, sir, Mr. Morrison. What brings you to town? We don't often see you in the middle of the week like this.
Matt brought 2 more yellow kerchiefs into the Undertaker. That's 4 of them gone now. I'm telling you the truth. Matt Jensen's like a one-man army.
Upon hearing Matt Jensen's name, Silva began to pay very close attention to the 4 men. Was Jensen among them? His question was answered a moment later when Marshal Drew stepped into the saloon.
Mr. Jensen?
One of the 4 men turned toward the marshal. He was a tall man with broad shoulders and narrow hips. There was a holstered pistol on his right hip, and the way he wore it told Silva that the stories he had heard about Jensen were probably not exaggerated.
Yes, Marshal.
One of the men you brought in was Clyde Beamer. There's a $250 reward out on him, so if you stop by my office, I'll issue you a voucher so you can cash that at the bank.
All right, thanks.
And here I was about to buy the first round. Drink up, boys. This round will be on Matt Jensen. With the reward he's got coming, he can buy all the drinks for the rest of the night.
All right. I wouldn't want to get a round that I'm cheap.
Silva studied Jensen over the next several minutes, observing how the others around him seemed to defer to him. He was obviously very popular and well-respected. He was a handsome man who appealed to the women. Silva could tell that by the way the bar girls reacted to him and the way he reacted to them, laughing and joking with them and treating them with respect, despite their occupation. It was clear that Matt Jensen was everything that Silva was not. And soon, Matt Jensen would be dead. As Silva anticipated killing him, he felt a charge of excitement course through his body. He had never been with a woman. He had no interest in women. But he had heard it described what a man felt like when he was with one. Silva was feeling that now. It was always like this. He would see his subject up close, see him talking, laughing, living, knowing what his subject did not know, that soon he would be dead. Silva's heart began beating faster, and he closed his eyes and clenched his fist to bring himself under control. Two days after Matt had killed the two would-be rustlers, William Teasdale arrived at Fruin Castle, driving a carriage to which was tied a horse.
What is this?
It's a horse for the boy. You can't have a boy out here without a horse.
You didn't have to do that, William.
I know I didn't have to, but it is something I wanted to do. He can ride it as long as he is here. When he goes back to England, I'll send someone over for the horse.
Yes, but you heard his mother. She doesn't want him riding.
Morton, the boy needs a mediator and advocate. I'm sure that if Lord Randolph were here, he would be on the boy's side. You are just going to have to be his surrogate father while he is here. Be strong. Stand up to Lady Churchill.
By damn, you are right. And what a wonderful thing for you to do, William, to bring a horse for Winnie to ride. Just a minute, I'll get him out here.
A few minutes later, Winnie, with a broad smile spread across his face, was standing on the front porch looking at the bay Arabian horse.
That has to be the most magnificent horse in the entire world.
Well, young man, he is yours for as long as you are here.
Can I ride him right now?
Of course you can ride him. That's why I brought him to you.
Winnie walked out to the horse, then, seeing how high the stirrup was from the ground, was a bit confused as how best to mount him.
Lead the horse over to the steps. That will be the easiest way to get on, until you learn how.
Winnie led the horse to the steps, then, using the steps, climbed into the saddle.
Winnie, what are you doing?
I am going horseback riding!
To what end?
Just to be riding.
What a waste of time.
Mama, no hour of life spent in a saddle is a waste of time.
You say that as if you have hours in the saddle.
I admit that this will be my first hour, but someday I will have many hours on the back of a horse. And years from now, when I am old and gray, I can look back on this and say, this was my finest hour.
No, I don't think you should go riding. Please get down now.
Jenny, let the boy ride. I promise you there is not one American boy in the entire West who is Winnie's age who is not riding with proficiency.
Proficiency? You have just made my point, Morton. How can Winnie ride with knowledge and skill when he has no experience?
And how does one gain experience, Jenny? One gains experience by involving themselves in an activity that leads to proficiency. Let the boy ride, I beg of you.
Please, Mama.
The expression on Jenny's face indicated clearly that this was not something she favored, but her objections were overcome by the combined efforts of Winnie and Fruin.
All right.
Oh, thank you, Mama. Thank you so much.
Please, Winston, do be careful. Don't do anything foolish.
Don't worry, Lady Churchill. I had my foreman pick out the most gentle horse in our stable.
That was very nice of you, Sir William.
Mr. Morrison, suppose you ride out with him this first time.
All right. Tell you what, young man, come along with me and watch me saddle my horse. You're gonna ride. That's something you'll need to know.
Winnie followed Morrison into the stable, where the foreman picked up a saddle and took it over to the stall where he kept his own horse. He put the saddle over the wall of the stall, then picked up a brush and stepped up to the horse and began brushing its back.
The first thing you want to do is brush your horse's back and make sure you remove any dirt or grit that might be under the saddle. Also, you want to be certain that all the hair is flat. If you don't, it could cause the horse to chafe under the saddle. And always check for sores or wounds before you put the saddle on. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now you start with the saddle blanket. You put the blanket forward over the withers, then pull it back into place. That keeps the hair flat beneath the saddle. Oh, and make sure the blanket is even on both sides.
Morrison demonstrated by putting the saddle blanket on the horse.
Now, before you put on the saddle, hook the stirrups over the horn. That way they won't hit the horse as you put the saddle on. And when you put the saddle on, lift it high enough so that it doesn't hit the horse or push the saddle blanket out of position. Put it slightly forward, then move it back into position, and put it on gently.
Again, Morrison showed what he was talking about by actually doing it.
Now all you have to do is tighten the cinch. You want it tight enough, but not too tight. Otherwise, the horse will be uncomfortable. Leave enough room so that you can get your fingers between the cinch and the horse.
All the time he was talking, Morrison was demonstrating, and now his horse was saddled and ready to go. With his horse saddled, Morrison walked over to Winnie's horse and removed the saddle and blanket.
Here, now you do it.
I didn't ask Sir William what this horse was named.
Winnie went about saddling the animal, repeating step by step the procedure Morrison had showed him.
I doubt that he has a name. I'm sure he just came from the remuda.
Then I intend to name him.
I'm sure he'll like that. What are you going to name him?
He's such a noble-looking horse that he needs a noble name. I think I shall call him Tudor Monarch.
Whew, that's quite a name.
When the horse was saddled, Winnie gave the animal a pat on the withers.
Here, get mounted. We'll take a ride.
Winnie started to lead the horse back to the porch.
Whoa, where are you going?
Over to the step so I can get on the horse.
Well, what if you had to dismount while you were out on the trail? How would you get back on then?
I don't know.
Here, let me show you.
Morrison pulled the left stirrup down far enough for Winnie to put his foot in it. Putting his left foot in the stirrup, then throwing his right leg over the horse, he was able to get into the saddle.
Now, reach down and pull up on this adjustment strap until the left stirrup is even with the other one.
When he did so, then a huge smile came across his face.
Oh, what a wonderful thing! I am a cowboy! I am truly a cowboy!
Carlos Silva had the perfect spot for his ambush. He was on top of a 200-foot-high butte with a perfect view of the big log house called Fruin Castle. Anyone leaving the house, or either one of the bunkhouses, to go work Fruin's cattle on his range would have to pass right under this butte. He had come here before dawn, and now, as the rising sun turned the Powder River into a gleaming stream of gold, he was able to observe the activity at the ranch. He saw the cook step out of the cook shack and toss out a pan of water. He watched cowboys going to and coming from the four outhouses that were lined up behind the two bunkhouses. He observed for nearly an hour as the ranch hands went into the cookhouse for the breakfast, then came out and started about their daily chores. Then he saw Matt Jensen. Jensen stepped out of the cookhouse, still holding a biscuit. He ate the last of it just before he went into the stable, and a few minutes later, Jensen led his horse out, mounted, then rode off. He was coming this way and would pass right under the butte. The first thing Silva had done when the sun rose this morning was to establish his range and field of fire. He located a boulder that was about waist high, and he aimed at it to get the range. He figured it at just under 500 yards. And he set his telescopic sight accordingly. As Jensen started toward him, Silva picked up some sand and dropped it to measure the windage. Now, he waited as Jensen came riding slowly up the road. Then, just before he reached the boulder that Silva had established as his firing point, he raised the rifle to his shoulder. Peering through the scope, he placed the crosshair so that the center point was just in front of Jensen's ear. Then he moved forward about 2 inches. All the lead he required at the rate Jensen was moving. He adjusted the set trigger, then moved his finger back to the firing trigger. All he had to do now was just touch it. He felt the rush. A wasp landed on Spirit's neck, and Matt leaned forward to brush it away. As he did so, he felt the concussion of the bullet taken off his hat. Had he not leaned forward at that exact moment, the bullet would have gone through his head instead of his hat. Because the gunshot was so loud, Matt knew that it wasn't a repeating rifle. It had to be a buffalo gun, which meant that the shooter would have to reload before he could shoot a second time. Matt slapped his legs against Spirit, and the horse burst forth like a cannon shot. As he was galloping away, Matt turned to look back up on the top of the butte and saw that the shooter, confident that he was out of range of any return fire, was standing upright, leisurely reloading his rifle. Matt continued to gallop away, opening distance between himself and the shooter.
Damn! How did the son of a bitch know exactly when to duck?
With his rifle reloaded, Silva raised it to his shoulders and sighted a second time. By now, the range had opened up to at least a half a mile. Silva had made shots this far before, so he was confident he could do it again. He set the trigger, then touched it. This bullet passed so close to Matt that for a brief second, the concussion of its passing made him think he had actually been hit. Obviously, distance wasn't enough protection from this shooter, so Matt pulled his rifle out, dismounted, then sent Spirit out of the way. He figured he had about 8 seconds before the next shot, and he used the time to run across the road where he was able to squat behind a boulder. He wanted to go all the way over to the edge of the butte, but if he did so, he would be exposed for too long a time, so the rock would have to do for now. Unfortunately, the boulder wasn't very large, and it was all he could do to get behind it. A third shot knocked off a chip of rocks as large as an apple, and the chip struck Matt in his right shoulder. The impact felt like someone had hit him with a hammer, and he felt a tingling all the way down his right arm to the tips of his fingers. But that gave him another 8 second opening, and he improved his position, this time actually making it to a coulee that reached back into the very butte on which he had spotted the shooter. Once there, he started climbing. Silva saw him running from behind the boulder, and if his rifle had been loaded, he would have gotten him. He had to admit that Jansen was pretty smart, figuring out just how much time he had between the shots. But he also knew that Jansen couldn't stay there as long as Silva would stay here. Silva had enough water and jerky to stay for 2 days if he had to. Silva saw that Jansen was carrying a rifle with him. He was too far away to see what kind of rifle it was, but he imagined it was either a Winchester or a Henry. It didn't matter. Neither model could come close to this one in range. He was in the perfect standoff position. Jensen would be in kill range long before he could get close enough to use his own rifle. Matt climbed the butte. Then, staying just below the crest, he worked his way around behind where he thought the shooter was. Carefully, he moved up almost to the top, got down on his hands and knees, and crawled the rest of the way up. Once there, he raised up to look over the edge. He saw Silva about 200 yards away. Matt pulled his pistol and shot it in the air just to get the shooter's attention. The shooter spun toward Matt, then raised his rifle. The shooter was good. Matt knew that, but he also knew that someone who prided himself on his marksmanship would not hurry his shot. Matt did hurry his shot, firing, cocking the rifle, and firing again, the second shot following so quickly on the first that it joined with the echo of the first shot. Matt saw the shooter react to being hit. He fired, but because he had been hit just as he was pulling the trigger, his shot went wild. He dropped his rifle, then slapped his hand over his wound. He walked forward in a few staggering steps, then fell to his knees, dropping his own rifle. Matt pulled his pistol and hurried across the flat top of the butte to the man he had just shot.
Who are you?
Silva. Carlos Silva.
Why were you shooting at me, Silva?
It's what I do for a living.
You won't be doing it anymore.
Silva didn't hear him. Silva was dead.
Just before he died, he told me his name was Carlos Silva. You ever heard of him?
No, I don't think I have. Well, at least not before a few days ago. But I understand he's been hanging out at the Lion and the Crown for a while. Now, you say he started shooting at you for no reason?
Yeah, from a long way off with a special rifle.
What kind of rifle?
It's out there, stuck down in a saddle holster. A 50 caliber with a scope.
50 caliber? Now, that'd do a job on a man.
It would.
Well, are you going to take him down to Welsh or should I?
I'll take him.
You know, you've given him more business this month than he's had in about the previous 6 months.
As long as the business I give him in me.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Silva's dead.
What? How do you know?
Because Welsh has him tied to a board in front of his place. Not only that, he's got the son of a bitch made up to look just like the devil. I tell you the truth, it was enough to give me the willies.
Jensen killed him?
Well, that's what they're saying.
How many lives does that bloody bastard have anyway? I have hired two men who were supposedly the best in their business to take care of him, and neither one was able to do the job.
And don't forget the stagecoach holdup that Logan arranged.
Yeah, that too.
Since Jensen came on the scene, Logan hasn't been able to take one cow from Fruin.
You think I don't know that?
Well, I'm sure you did. I was just commenting is all.
We've got to get rid of that bloody bastard before he makes a mess of everything.
I got an idea, if you're willing to go along with it.
What would that be?
I'd say you offer a reward to anyone who takes care of him. That way we won't have to find anyone. The word will get out and there'll be enough people willing to collect on the money that they'll find us.
You know, Reed, that might not be a bad idea.
The only thing is, it has to be a high enough reward to get people interested in it.
I've been told that Fruin has paid Matt Jensen $5,000 to regulate for him. I think it would be poetic justice if the reward on Jensen's head would also be $5,000. That is, if you think that would be high enough. And the beauty, of course, is I won't have to pay it until after the job is done.
Now, Mr. Teasdale, a reward that large will have half the gunmen in the West coming after him. There'll be someone after him constantly. And what will make it even better is he won't know when someone is going to turn up next, who it'll be, or where they'll be coming from.
How do we announce such a thing? It isn't exactly as if we can go to the constabularies and get reward posters circulated.
You don't worry about that. Once a few people get wind of this, it'll spread like wildfire. We'll have people from Texas to California coming up here to collect.
One more thing. It can't be known that I am the one putting out the reward. This can't be traced back to me. If it is, it would ruin everything.
I'll take care of that.
No, you can't put out the reward either. You are working for me. If it is traced back to you, that would be the same thing as tracing it to me.
I didn't mean I would take care of it by being the one to post the reward. All we have to do is have Sam Logan post the reward for us. That'll not only keep it from coming back to you. Logan also knows people who know people, and that will get the word out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Go see him. Tell him what we need.
Later that afternoon, Reed showed Logan an article from the newspaper chronicling Matt Jensen's heroics of the past few weeks. Sam Logan read the article, then handed it back to Reed.
All right, I read it. Why did you show it to me? Do you think I have to read it in the newspaper what a pain in the ass Jensen's been?
I showed it to you because I want you to see how important it is that we get rid of the son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, we've tried three times, and it hasn't worked any time. Besides which, my cousin got himself killed, and so did Silva. Except I don't give a shit about Silva, that back-shooting bastard. He's good riddance as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, now we have another plan.
And what is that?
We aren't going to try to hire anyone in particular. We're just going to put out a $5,000 reward on his head. And we'll pay it to anyone who kills him, no matter who it is.
Well, that might work. Only thing is, how are you going to get the word out? It ain't like you can put an ad in the newspaper, and you probably ain't going to be able to get anyone to print up posters on it either.
I know. We thought maybe you could get the word out.
Why me?
Well, several reasons. Number one, your business is being hurt by Jensen more than Mr. Teasdale's business is. You're the one he's after, and you have a network of contacts that will allow you to get the word out. Mr. Teasdale, on the other hand, can't let it be known he's behind the reward.
All right, I'll put the word out, but I want $1,000 for doing it.
Why would you want $1,000? Hell, like I said, you're the one Jensen is looking for. I would think you'd be happy to have Teasdale put up the money for a reward that might just save your life.
Let's just say it's my handling fee.
I don't know if he'll go along with it.
You can talk him into it.
Why should I? It's not my neck that's on the line here. Jensen isn't looking for me.
Well, wouldn't you like to have a handling fee?
Me?
Yeah. Say, $500. You get an extra $1,000 for me to spread the word and handle the reward, and there's $500 in it for you.
I like the way you think, Sam Logan.
Jake Scarnes was in the Buffalo Gal Saloon in Buffalo when he saw Mo Greer come into the bar. Scarnes and Greer had spent some time together in the Colorado State Prison. When Greer saw Scarnes, he stopped at the bar, bought a bottle, and took it and two glasses over to the table where Scarnes was sitting.
All right, what's this all about?
$5,000.
All right, I'm interested.
Have you ever heard of a man named Matt Jensen?
I saw him once, down in Colorado.
Would you recognize him on sight?
Yeah, why?
What, do you recognize you?
No, I don't see why I would. Like I said, I saw him once, but I never actually met him. What is this about, Mo?
Someone I know is willing to pay $5,000 to have Matt Jensen killed.
Now you're talking about Sam Logan, ain't you?
How'd you know?
Well, it's been in the paper. Sam Logan had a good thing going until this fella Jensen showed up.
All right, yes, I am talking about Sam Logan. So are you interested?
Yeah. For $5,000, I'd kill the son of a bitch in front of the county sheriff.
Two days after the meeting between Greer and Scarnes, Matt was in the line in the Crown. He had just finished one beer and asked Harry for another when he saw, by the reflection of the mirror behind the glass shelf full of bottles, that someone was rising from a table behind him and pulling his gun. Instantly, Matt drew his own pistol and whirled toward the man. When that man saw how quickly Matt had drawn, he held his hands up, letting the pistol dangle from its trigger guard.
Who are you?
The man didn't answer.
I asked who you are.
Scarnes. Jake Scarnes. Now don't shoot, Jensen. Don't shoot.
Why the hell shouldn't I? You about to back shoot me, weren't you?
My God, mister, you are not real. You know that? What does it take to kill you?
I don't know. How much you getting paid?
Matt just took a chance on asking that question. It was something he suspected, but not anything he knew for sure.
$5,000.
Looks like you're gonna have to give the money back.
I ain't got it. Nobody got it yet. It's the reward for killing you. I ain't going to be the only one trying.
Who's put up the reward?
You're asking too many damn questions.
Who else is coming after me? Are there others?
Hell, with that much money on your head, there's probably a dozen or so. I don't know who else.
I'll tell you what. For the time being, I'm going to park you in the jail.
What do you mean? You ain't got no authority to put me in jail. You ain't carrying a badge.
Yeah, I am. I'm carrying a badge for the Union Pacific Railroad.
Are you crazy? There ain't no railroad up here.
Have you ever ridden on a train?
What? Yeah, of course I've been on a train, so what?
If you've ever been on a train, that means you've used the railroad, and that's all the authority I need. Let me have your gun.
You know what I think? I think you're just saying that. There ain't no way your badge can mean anything just because I've been on a train. You can't take me to jail because I ain't done nothing, and you got no authority over me.
Give me your gun.
All right. If you say so.
Scarnes smiled then, slowly, turned the pistol around so that the butt was pointing toward Matt.
But you be careful with your gun. See, I've done give up. And this here saloon is full of witnesses who will swear I was handing you my gun. You shoot me now, you will hang.
All right, Scarnes. I'm going to park you in jail, and that's where you're going to stay until I find out who's paying you. And if there are any others after me, you're more than likely going to have company.
You ain't scaring me none, Jensen. I won't be in jail long. See, I didn't do nothing. I might have wanted to, but I didn't. And you can't keep a man in jail for wanting to do something.
Matt reached for Scarn's gun, but Scarn suddenly executed a border roll. Matt wasn't often caught by surprise, but this time he was. Not only because Scarn's had the audacity to try such a thing, but because he was so good at it. Because Matt had let the hammer down on his pistol and lowered it, he had to raise the gun back into line while at the same time cocking it. Gray gun smoke billowed out from the two pistols, spreading into a cloud that momentarily obscured the results of the unexpected shootout. From their various positions around the saloon, everyone looked toward the bar where the action had taken place, waiting until the smoke cleared enough for them to see. Gradually, the smoke began to roll away, and as it did, everyone could see Scarn still standing there with a broad smile on his face. He took one step toward Matt, Then the smile left his face, and his eyes glazed over. Matt was ready to fire again if need be, but a second shot wasn't necessary. He stood in place for a moment, looking down at Scarns before he finally holstered his pistol. Marshal Drew ran into the saloon.
Marshal, it wasn't Jensen's fault. Everyone in here will tell you this fellow on the floor, Scarns, he said his name was, started it all.
Yeah, they've all been like that. Matt, you're a good man, I'll attest to that, but I swear the Grim Reaper must just hover over you.
Another one? Are you telling me that Jensen killed another one?
Yeah, someone who was trying to collect a reward.
How do you know he was trying to collect the reward?
Because he said it out loud, and everyone in the saloon heard him.
My God, that's not good.
He didn't say who offered the reward, and of course he wouldn't know anyway because he thought the reward would be coming from Sam Logan. And anyone else who might try to collect is going to think the same thing.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that is right, isn't it?
And look at it this way. Jensen isn't dead, that's true, but you aren't out any money yet either. And you won't be until someone actually gets the job done.
That leaves a question hanging, though, doesn't it?
What question is that?
Is there nobody that can kill that bloody bastard?
In the town of Curtis Wells, about 20 miles east of Sussex, Pete Carter, Tim Hodge, and Ben Decker were in the backlot saloon.
$5,000. That's how much the reward is to take care of Jensen.
$5,000? We was only going to get $100 apiece. Who's giving this reward anyway?
From what I hear, it is Sam Logan.
Sam Logan? He don't have that much money.
How do you know he don't? He's been running a pretty good operation in Johnson County for near about a year now. Hell, there ain't no telling how much money he's got.
What I'm wondering is why he would be willing to give out so much money as a reward for killing Jensen when he was only going to give us $100 apiece.
Well, think about it. From what I hear, Jensen is playing hell with Logan's operation. He's already killed half a dozen of his men, and if you had something good going and there was a chance that some son of a bitch was going to mess it up for you, wouldn't you want to get rid of him?
Yeah, I guess, but it don't seem fair that he'd be offering all that money to someone else and not to us.
Who said it ain't us?
What do you mean?
It's a reward. It'll be paid to anyone who takes care of Jensen. All we gotta do is get him first and the money is ours.
How do we do that? We already run into him once and it didn't work out all that well, if you remember.
Nah, we didn't run into him. He ran into us. This time we'll do it different.
Matt was having his lunch at the Lion and the Crown when he saw Carter, Hodge, and Decker come into the saloon. He recognized them right away and wondered what they were doing there. Then, when they started toward him, he knew that their presence was no mere accident.
Well, Mr. Jensen, it looks like we meet again.
I didn't think you boys would show up in Sussex.
Oh, I'm sure you didn't.
Tell me, Jensen, do you really think you could steal our guns and get away with it?
I didn't steal them. I just held on to them for a while. If you want them back, all you have to do is go see Marshal Drew.
Nah, we don't want them back. We got us new guns.
Do you now? You boys do seem to have something on your mind, and I'm just betting it would be the reward money.
You know about the reward, do you?
Yeah. Evidently, a couple of men have already tried for it.
Yeah? Where are they now?
Oh, the town gave him choice lots down in the cemetery.
We've talked enough, Carter. I'd say let's just go ahead and kill him now.
Are you gonna do it, are you, Hodge?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. He don't look all that tough to me. Last time he was standing behind us, if you remember. This time we are face to face, and I say let's do it. Get our money and be done with it.
Hodge moved his hand down to hover just over his own gun.
What about it, Mr. Big Shot Gunfighter? You want to settle this now?
It's pretty brave of you. What'd your friend call you, Hodge?
Yeah, the name is Hodge. Tim Hodge. What about it, Mr. Matt Jensen, Mr. Big Time Gunfighter? I'm getting pretty tired of jawing. I'd say that you either go for your gun now or get plumb on out of the country with your tail tucked down between your legs.
You're challenging me to a gunfight, are you, Mr. Hodge?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm challenging you to a gunfight.
Well, it's not really fair now, is it? I mean, with me sitting down and you standing up, sort of hard to make a quick draw from a sitting position. Are you going to allow me to stand up first?
Well, now, what do you think, boys? Should I give this famous gunfighter a chance and let him stand up? Or should I just kill him where he sits for being so stupid as to let himself get caught in this predicament?
You aren't going to let me stand, are you, Hodge?
No, I ain't.
I didn't think so. And this isn't the first time some coward challenged me while I was sitting down. So, you might say that I was ready for it. You see, I already have my gun out, and I'm pointing it at you right now.
What the hell are you talking about? Hell, your gun ain't out. I can see your gun in that fancy holster plain as day.
Oh, I'm glad you noticed. That is a nice holster, isn't it? I had that made, especially for me down in El Paso.
Mister, you ain't making no sense at all. What gun do you have pointed at me?
Matt brought his hand up from under the table. His fingers were wrapped around a small pistol.
Well, now that would be this gun, Mr. Hodge. It's a Derringer, 2 barrels, 41 caliber. Doesn't have that much range, but hell, how far are you from me anyway? 6 feet, 10 feet? They say that's about how far Lincoln was from John Wilkes Booth when he killed him with the same kind of weapon.
Where did that gun come from?
Oh, I can't give away all my secrets now, can I, Mr. Hodge?
Looks to me like you have a problem.
And what problem would that be?
You can't count.
Why would you say that?
You've only got 2 barrels on that gun, and there are 3 of us.
Damn if you aren't right, Hodge. There are 3 of you, and I have only 2 barrels.
Which means that you can't kill all 3 of us.
You're right again. I can't get all 3 of you. So here's what I'm going to do. Since you seem to be the only one smart enough to have figured that out, I'm going to let you live, but I'm going to kill the other 2.
What the hell you say?
Tell you what, why don't I just shoot them now and get it over with? I believe I can kill both of them before you can kill me. Shall we try it?
No!
Carter pulled his pistol and pointed it at Hodge.
Hodge, you put that gun away now. You think I'm going to let him shoot us just so you can shoot him?
He's bluffing. He can't kill all 3 of us.
I ain't worried about all 3 of us, you dumb son of a bitch. I'm only worried about me. Get your hand away from your gun now or I'll blow your damn head off myself.
Hodge moved his hand away.
Good move, Mr. Hodge.
Matt turned the pistol toward Carter.
Now, you are making me nervous. I would appreciate it very much if you would put your gun back in its holster.
All right, I'm doing it. Come on, let's go.
The 3 men left the saloon, but Matt was reasonably sure that he hadn't seen the last of them. He finished his lunch and then went outside. He stepped down from the boardwalk. Even as Matt was locating the shooter who was just behind a watering trough on the opposite side of the street just in front of the feed and seed store, there was a second, then a third shot. Matt darted into the space between the saloon and the leather goods store that was adjacent to the line in the Crown. With his gun in hand, he backed up against the wall of the leather goods store, then looked back into the street. He wasn't the only one who had been stirred into action, because the street, which had been crowded with pedestrians a moment earlier, was emptying quickly as everyone hurried to get out of the line of fire. So far, he only knew the location of one of the shooters, that being the one behind the watering trough across the street. That there were 2 more convinced him that these had to be the same 3 men who had braced him in the saloon earlier. A ladder was attached to the rear of the leather goods store, and, holstering his pistol, Matt climbed to the top. Then, bending down at the waist so not to be silhouetted against the sky, Matt ran to the front of the building and stood behind the false front. Matt had hoped that from this vantage point he might be able to see the shooter behind the watering trough, but he couldn't. In fact, he wasn't even sure the shooter was still behind the trough.
Where'd he go? Hodge, Decker, either one of you see him? You have any idea where he went?
The call came from the roof of the apothecary, which was just across the street from Matt. Matt stepped out from behind the false front.
You looking for me?
There he is!
Matt recognized the one on the roof of the apothecary as Carter. And Carter, even as he was shouting to the others, took a shot at Matt and missed. Matt shot back and didn't miss. Decker and Hodge both shot at Matt, and though both of them missed, they came close enough to cause him to drop back down behind the false front for both cover and concealment. This time, he saw where both shots came from. One of the shots confirmed his belief that one of the shooters was still behind a watering trough. The other came from just inside the front door of the Chinese laundry. Hurrying to the rear of the building, Matt climbed down the ladder, then ran several buildings up the street. Moving up through the gap between Sykes' hardware store and the lumberyard, Matt looked back down the street. He saw Hodge peering out from the front of the laundry and Decker rising up to look over the watering trough. Both men were focusing their attention on the false front of the leather goods store. That was where they last saw him, and that was where they believed him still to be. Taking advantage of the fact that they were focusing on where he wasn't, Matt managed to dart across the street unseen by either of his adversaries. Moving between two buildings, Matt was now able to move down the alley on the opposite side of the street from where he had been. Reaching the back of the Chinese laundry, he saw two Chinese men and three women standing out back with terrified expressions on their faces. When he saw them, they became even more frightened, but he held his fingers to his lips, then, by motions, let them know he was a friend. Matt started to open the back door, but one of the men shook his head, then signaled that he should enter the other way. Following him, Matt was shown a small half-door on the side of the building. Smiling and nodding, the Chinese man pointed, indicating he should go into the building that way. Matt did as he was directed, though he didn't know why until he got inside. Then he saw that this way enabled him to be behind a freestanding shelf out of sight of Hodge. Had he come in through the back door as he had planned, Hodge would have seen him the moment he opened the door.
Decker! Decker, do you see him?
No!
Matt stepped out from behind the shelf.
Drop your gun, Hodge.
Son of a biatch! How'd you get in here?
Drop it.
The hell I will!
Hodge fired at Matt, the bullet flying past Matt's ear. Matt returned fire.
Hodge! What happened?
Matt stepped out through the front door.
I happened.
You!
Decker lifted his pistol, but Matt had already decided to end it. A little bit later on, a crowd had gathered. Marshal Drew checked all three bodies, then came over to talk to Matt, who was leaning against a hitching rail with his arms folded across his chest, just looking out at the people. Marshal Drew was unable to discern any expression of excitement, fear, or anger. There was absolutely nothing to indicate that he had just been in peril or that he had just killed three men. From the expression on Matt's face, he might have been observing the commerce of a normal day.
I heard what happened between you and these three men back at the Lion and the Crown. Now, you gave them every opportunity to walk away from it, and they didn't. And these are the same three who tried to hold up the stagecoach, aren't they?
Yes.
They must have been pissed that you broke it up.
I don't think so.
What do you mean?
I don't think revenge had anything to do with it. In fact, I don't think they were even trying to rob the stagecoach.
Really? Then what the hell were they planning?
I think they were there to kill me. And when it didn't work that day, they came back.
For the reward?
Yep.
Oh, well, then there'll be more coming after you, won't there?
There will be until I can get to the source of the reward.
Sam Logan?
Yeah, I suppose so.
What do you mean, you suppose? Everyone says it's Logan.
Over the years, I've learned to trust nothing that I hear and only half of what I see.
Over the several days since young Winston Churchill had been given access to a horse, he spent at least 4 hours a day in the saddle. He gained confidence and poise, but he also learned the meaning of the term saddle sore. However, he neither complained nor even mentioned it, bearing up stoically in order to continue with this, his newfound passion. By now, Winnie had become not only a familiar sight around the ranch, but a favorite of the cowboys as well. He joined them as they attended to their regular duties, such as seeing that the cattle were moved around the ranch to water and grazing areas, mending the fences, even branding when necessary. He was invited to eat in the cookhouse with the other cowboys, and he became a regular at mealtimes, learning not only to eat, but to relish the cowboy fare of biscuits, beans, fried steak, and especially apple pie. And though he was used to drinking tea, He was teaching himself to drink strong black coffee.
They call it grub, and it is quite tasty.
Heavens, how can anyone eat something that's called grub?
You can eat it if you are a cowboy.
I see. And you're a cowboy now, are you?
Yes.
What makes you a cowboy?
Mama, I have given blood, toil, tears, and sweat on the range. I believe that makes me a cowboy.
I certainly won't question that.
Believing that the time had come to put his plan into action, Teasdale rode out to Logan's headquarters at Nine Mile Creek.
If you're here to complain that I ain't brought you no more cows from the Fruin Ranch, I already know that I haven't. And there ain't likely to be any more either, till we get rid of that bastard Jensen.
That's why I'm here. I think I know how to get rid of him.
Yeah? Well, you're gonna have to let me in on it, because I sure as hell ain't figured out a way yet. We've got a $5,000 reward out on him. 6 men have tried to kill him, and all 6 are pushing up daisies.
Mr. Jensen appears to be a man of extraordinary acumen, reflexes, and nerve.
If you mean he's harder than killing cockroaches, I agree.
I do have a plan in mind, though. It isn't one that I wanted to use, but I believe it may be our best chance. Indeed, it may be our only chance.
What is it?
Fruin's sister-in-law and nephew are here, visiting from England. The nephew is a 10-year-old boy, the son of Lord Randolph Churchill. His name is Winston. If Winston were to be abducted...
To be what?
Taken. We could set up a scenario whereby...
Look, 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 you're going to have to talk English to me. What the hell is this scenario?
What I am trying to say is this. The boy goes riding just about every day, and he is getting bolder and bolder, which means he is going farther and farther from the house. If you would send a couple of men out to grab him and bring him here, we could lure Jensen into a situation that would allow us to take care of him once and for all.
What you're saying is, you want us to use the boy as bait and set a trap for Jensen, is that it?
Yes, that is exactly what I am saying.
Then why didn't you just say so in the first place instead of all this other blather, scenarios and that sort of thing?
Never mind. The point is, you know exactly what I am talking about.
All right, where will the boy be?
I can't tell you that because I don't know exactly. All I know is that he is doing a lot of riding all over the ranch. I think there will be several opportunities to find him out on his own, and when you do, all you have to do is take him.
And what if he don't want to be took?
It is obvious that he will not want to be taken, but he is a 10-year-old boy, so I expect you to be able to deal with it. But, and this is very important, I don't want the boy hurt. If he is hurt, he will be useless to us as bait.
All right. If he is wandering around out there on his own, like you say he is, we ought not to have no trouble in snatching him. But what do we do after we get him?
Get a message to Morton Fruin, telling him that you have the boy, and that you will only release him to Matt Jensen.
Over the last several days of riding on his uncle's ranch, Winnie was beginning to be able to find his way around. He discovered that it was very easy to navigate by positioning particular peaks and rock formations. But, as a final fallback, he knew that the Powder River ran right behind Fruin Castle, so he could never get lost as long as he followed the waterways. Going out, he would keep the Powder River to his right. If he rode off on an exploration, he knew that he had only to reverse his course and return to the river. Then he could follow it back. Today, he planned to be out for most of the day, and he had prepared for it by bringing a lunch prepared for him by the ranch cook. It consisted of a biscuit, fried chicken, and a piece of cake. Reaching the junction of the Powder River and Williams Creek, he turned northwest to follow the creek for a little way before he dismounted to eat his lunch. From there, he had a magnificent view of the Bighorn Mountains to the west and the Black Hills to the east. To the south lay the Powder River Basin, several hundred thousand acres of rich and well-watered grassland that made Johnson County ideal for raising cattle. The thing that made this area good for cattle also made it good for game, and he could see deer, bighorn sheep, elk, and antelope wandering around the area. Finishing his biscuit and chicken, he picked up the cake. The cook had wrapped it in a piece of cloth to keep it moist. While sitting there eating his cake, Winnie listened to the babbling of Williams Creek as it made its way another quarter of a mile to empty into the Powder River. He'd never been anywhere that he considered more exciting or beautiful than this ranch. He looked up and saw three riders approaching him. Thinking they were some of his uncle's cowboys, he waited until they got very close. Only then did he realize that he had never seen any of them before, not even in the cookhouse at meals.
Hello, boy.
Hello, sir.
Would your name be Winston Churchill?
It is indeed.
One of the riders approached very close.
Well, it's a nice-looking horse. Is it yours?
It is a loan from Sir William. But he has been given to me to use while I'm here, so I have named him. I call him Tudor Monarch.
That's a pretty high-fluting name.
That same rider reached out and took the reins of Winnie's horse.
Excuse me, sir, but why did you take the reins of my horse?
Winston, get mounted. We're going to take a little ride together.
I'd rather not take a ride with you if it is all the same to you. I have my ride planned for the day. It is necessary that I do that so that Uncle Morton and Mama will always know where I am.
You don't worry about that. We'll tell them where you are.
The other two riders came up very close, and Winnie knew that he was in great danger.
Am I being abducted?
If that means are you being snatched up, then the answer is yeah, that's what we're doing.
To what end?
To what end? Oh, did you hear that, Grant? He wants to know, to what end? Ain't he about the damnedest talking boy you've ever been around?
I'll tell you to what end. There's a group of us that wants your uncle to do something for us, and we figure he will do it if he knows that's the only way he'll see you alive again.
What is it you wish done?
We want him to send Matt Jensen to come fetch you. You think your uncle will do something like that?
I don't really know Uncle Morton all that well, so I can't tell you with honesty whether he will or will not do what you ask.
Well, you better hope that he will do it, boy. Because if he don't, we'll send you back to him belly down on this horse.
Jeff Singleton was looking for strays when suddenly three men rode out of a coulee with guns drawn and pointed at him. All three wore yellow handkerchiefs.
Oh, well, what do you want? I ain't got no money and I ain't herding no cows.
We want you to do something for us. We want you to deliver a note to Morton Fruin.
What kind of a note?
What should it matter what kind of note? The only thing that should matter to you is this. If you deliver it, you live. If you don't, you die. Now tell me, cowboy, what's it to be?
I'll deliver the note.
Yeah, I thought you might.
The rider handed him a folded piece of paper.
How fast that horse?
I beg your pardon?
How fast that horse? You think he's fast enough to get you out of rifle range in a minute?
I don't know.
The rider pulled his rifle and cocked it.
Well, you better hope he is, because in 1 minute I'm going to take a shot at you. So I suggest you get going now.
Forty-five minutes later, Singleton showed the note to Myron Morrison, thinking it might be better to go show it to the foreman first. Morrison read the note, then with compressed lips and narrowed eyes, looked back up at Singleton.
Where'd you get this?
Three men came up on me. It was them that gave this here note to me, telling me that if I didn't deliver it, they was going to shoot me. As soon as they let me go, I hightailed it out of there. They said to give it to Mr. Fruin, but I figured maybe it would be better if you'd done it.
Thanks a lot.
I mean, you don't mind being to one to show them, do you? Being as you're a foreman and all.
All right. I'll take the note to them.
Fruin was in the drawing room looking at the latest figures that he was preparing to send to his business partners back in England. The figures were not so good. The Powder River Cattle Company was operating at a severe deficit.
Mr. Fruin, I expect you'd better take time for this. It's pretty important.
All right. What is it? What do you have for me?
Morrison handed the note to Fruin.
Jeff Singleton brought it in a few minutes ago. He said that he ran across three men and they gave it to him.
With an anxious feeling, Fruin unfolded the note.
Fruin, we've got the boy. If you want to see him alive again, send Jensen to Junction of Nine Mile Creek and the Powder River at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. He must be alone. If we see anyone with him, we will kill the boy. If he does not show up, we will kill the boy.
God in heaven. Do you think anyone would actually be so low as to kill a boy?
Yeah, I think they would.
I don't understand. Why do they want Mr. Jensen to come to Nine Mile Creek?
It's pretty obvious. They want him there so they can kill him.
Oh, my. Then I am being asked to choose between the life of my nephew and the life of Mr. Jensen?
Yes, sir. I'd say that's about it.
I don't know where to go with this.
When Matt went into the parlor of Fruin Castle, he saw Jenny crying and Carla trying to comfort her. Morrison stood near the fireplace while Fruin sat in a big leather chair with his head leaning forward, his forehead resting on his fist.
What's wrong?
Fruin held the note out to Matt.
Read this.
As Matt took the piece of paper from Fruin, he looked over at the crying women, and wondering what it was about, he read the note. After he read it, he handed it back.
What do you make of that?
We don't have any choice, Mr. Fruin. I have to go.
Matt walked over to where Jenny and Claire were sitting together on a leather sofa.
Don't worry. I will find Winnie for you.
Oh, Matt, please. Matt, bring Winston back safely to me.
I will. I promise you, I will.
Matt, you do know that they are using the boy for bait, don't you? They are setting you up to be killed.
It won't be the first time a trap's been set for me.
I'm sure it isn't, but this one... I mean, to use young Winnie as they are doing is so diabolical.
I'll grant you that it is. But they have made a big mistake.
How is that?
They've given away their hand.
I'm the one that is at fault here. I let him, indeed, I encouraged him to feel free to ride anywhere on the ranch. It just never dawned on me that he would be in any danger. I mean, what would they want with him? If something happens to my nephew because of me, I will never forgive myself.
I'm going to find him, Mr. Fruin. I'm going to find him, and I'm going to bring him home safely.
Do you think you can do that? Tell me the truth now. I don't want you saying just what you think will make me feel better. I want to know if you really think you can do it.
Yes, he can. I know Mr. Jensen, and I am convinced that he will be able to find and rescue Winnie.
When they brought Winnie to the little house, they put him over in the corner next to the fireplace. He had seen some of the line shacks during the last several days of his rides around the ranch, and this was just like a line shack, though perhaps a little larger than most he had seen. It couldn't actually be a line shack, though, because it was at the head of a long, deep ravine, or coulee, as he had heard the cowboys call such things. There were at least six men in the shack, all wearing yellow kerchiefs, and though the men who had abducted him had not been wearing yellow kerchiefs at the time, they had since put them on. This gave them a sense of camaraderie and belonging, as if they were soldiers in an army. Four of the men were playing cards. One of the four, a man without a beard, but with a long, bushy, dark black mustache, had identified himself as Sam Logan. Logan, Winnie knew from the conversations he had overheard, was the head of the gang of rustlers who had been stealing cattle from his uncle. One of the men was cooking, while the sixth sat on a bunk cleaning his gun. Winnie was frightened, but he was also curious about such as these men, and he watched and listened.
Hey, kid! I hear you're from England. Is that right?
That is correct.
That is correct, he said. You reckon all kids from England talk like that?
Well, it ain't just the kids. You heard Teasdale talking, ain't you? Always so prim and proper.
Suddenly, and unexpectedly, Logan hit the man who had just spoken with a wicked backhanded slap.
What the hell'd you do that for?
Because you've got a big mouth, Poindexter, and you don't know when to shut up.
What did I say? All I said was... Oh!
Logan stared at him. And Poindexter suddenly realized what he had done.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean nothing by it. I won't say nothing else.
Yes, that's probably the wisest thing for you to do. Deal me out. Clayton,
Yeah?
How much longer till we can get some grub?
These beans is all done, and I'm taking off some pan cornbread now.
Logan stepped over to the stove, got a bowl of beans, and broke off a piece of cornbread. Getting a spoon, he carried the bowl with him and stepped over to squat down beside Winnie.
Boy, you been listening to what we was talking about?
No, sir. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Should I have been? Oh, I'm too frightened. I suppose I've just been wondering what was going to happen to me.
Nothing is going to happen to you if everyone does what they're supposed to do. These beans ain't bad. Clayton used to cook for a big ranch. Now he cooks for us. He makes a lot more now than he used to. That's right, ain't it, Clayton? You're making a lot more now than you used to.
A lot more.
You hungry? You want something to eat?
No, sir. I had a rather good lunch before your three men came to get me. Besides, I am too frightened to eat now.
You're scared, huh?
Yes, sir. Very much.
Well, I've got to hand it to you, kid. You ain't showing it much.
I have been taught to keep a stiff upper lip.
A stiff upper lip? What does that mean? I've never heard that used before.
It is a British idiom. It means to remain undaunted in the face of danger and adversity. It is best expressed in a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, why not? Let me hear it.
Forward the Light Brigade! Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600.
What is that about? I mean, what do you mean, the valley of death?
It refers to a regiment of British cavalry led by Lord Cardigan against the Russians during the Crimean War. There were 600 who started the charge, and nearly half of them were killed.
I'll be damned. And you think that was good, do you?
I do not think it is good that so many were killed, but I think the fact that they showed honor, courage, and kept a stiff upper lip is to be admired.
And I think they were crazy. If I had been there, you'd better believe that I wouldn't have done anything so crazy.
What would you have done?
I would have run away.
You would do so at the expense of your honor?
Honor? Kid, I'm a rustler and a murderer. To me, the only honor is staying alive.
I see.
The only place there is honor is in poems and stories and such. Honor ain't nothing real.
Oh, but I believe it is, sir.
Do you know anyone with honor?
Oh, indeed I do, sir. Mr. Jensen is a man of honor and courage.
Well, we will see just how much honor and courage Jensen has, won't we? You think he will try and rescue you?
That's why you are holding me here, isn't it? You are using me as bait.
You're a smart kid, ain't you? But don't worry. Once we draw him into the trap, we'll let you go.
Logan left Winnie and went back to talk to the others.
Jensen will show up at the point tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Only we are going to be there at 9. No, make it 8.
Hell, that is 2 hours early. Why do we need to be there so early?
In case he gets anxious and comes early, I want us to already be there.